but I think we're joined by Eve Engler himself. Are you there, Eve?
How's it going, Phil?
Very good for us. There's a lot of rough things going on in the world, and you're an authority on rough things. You keep us all up to date. It's eveengler.com, or is it .ca?
.com.
.com. You've written about the Venezuela situation, and I noticed in your last article you talked about the hypocrisy and the dishonesty of Washington and Canada. We're having now a kind of, I guess we just got this moment here where, because of the conduct of Canada and others at the Organization of American States meddling in internal affairs of Venezuela, Venezuela has announced, apparently with huge demonstrations, I gather, yesterday, the day before, they're going to pull out of the OAS. You've talked about and thought about what Chrystia Freeland and others are up to with Lima. What's your assessment of the role of Canada in all this?
Well, I think the Canadian government is playing a very important role. Basically, what they did at the Organization of American States was they got, they being the anti-Venezuelan government forces, obviously led by Washington, but with Canada right there at the center of it, they got the Organization of American States to pass this resolution saying that Juan Guaido's representative would be was able to seat at the OAS, which, according to nine Caribbean countries, is totally in violation of the OAS's charter. Mm-hmm. And it's just one part of this multifaceted campaign to isolate the Venezuelan government diplomatically in the world. And that Canada is playing a central role. And just yesterday, the press release, the Japanese Prime Minister was in Canada, and one of the points that the Canadian government put in the press release is that the Japanese government, after this meeting, has endorsed the Ottawa Declaration on Venezuela, which was something the Canadian government, I guess about 2 months ago, was the Lima group meeting in Ottawa, which is to recognize the head of the National Assembly of Venezuela as a self-declared president. So the Canadian government is working all its meetings. Trudeau personally has had probably about a dozen or more leaders that he's had conversations with to have them join Canada's campaign against the Venezuelan government. Chrystia Freeland, foreign minister, has been aggressive for at least 2 years now in all her meetings with officials in the Caribbean, Central America, meetings that, on the surface of it should have nothing to do with Venezuela. Venezuela is always brought up at these meetings, and part of what we see at the OAS a couple of weeks ago was the vote against Venezuela's position is the fruits of this multi-year campaign. And you got to understand that Canada has a fair bit of influence with a number of these countries like Haiti that have turned against Venezuela in recent weeks and months.
Yeah. By the way, we just spoke to a representative of Lavalas at the beginning of the show, and this thing of Haiti, it is so embarrassing that Haiti shows up at the Lima Group meetings at a time when the people of Haiti want to know what happened to the money and the Petrocaribe project, in which Venezuela, out of appreciation of Haiti for Haiti's role in the liberation of South America, had a special relationship for reasonably priced fuel. And here we have the Haitian leader, instead of saying how grateful they would be, should be, he goes off to a meeting with the U.S. and the Canadians and condemns the elected president of Venezuela.
Yeah, no, I mean, and then the question of, we say that Maduro is not people aren't behind him. Well, look at the election of Jovenel Moïse in Haiti. It's 18% turnout. basically, the whole country is opposed to him. I mean, the only reason he didn't fall after the general strike at the start of February was because he has the backing of of Washington and Ottawa, mm-hmm. like at the police force that Canada continues to train, and it's killed dozens and dozens of people in recent weeks, months in Haiti. Canada finances, you have all these examples of Canadian officials inaugurating new police training offices in recent months, with public statements by the core group that of so-called Friends of Haiti that Canada's part of. But, you know, it's not just Haiti. I mean, also in the case of Honduras, the government that another more active long-term member of the Lima Group, the government of Juan Orlando Hernandez in Honduras, you know, he ran for a second term, which explicitly contravenes the Honduran constitution. When he was down after about 60% of vote counted, he's down by 5%. All of a sudden, the election counting stops. When it starts back up, he's in the lead. And, you know, the campaign, the Trudeau's claiming what we're doing in Venezuela is trying to uphold the Venezuelan constitution. Hmm. Maduro's constitutional legitimacy is infinitely greater than Juan Orlando Hernandez's constitutional legitimacy in Honduras, yet that's been a part of the Lima Group now for, you know, a year plus, and we have their minister brought up to, you know, Canada during the recent Lima Group meeting in Ottawa, you know, 2 months ago. So, I mean, the hypocrisy just goes on and on this campaign. But listeners really do need to understand just the scope of Canada's involvement in this, right? This is Canada funding opposition groups in Venezuela. This is Canada working diplomatically. This is Canada, bringing Venezuela to the International Criminal Court, first time ever that member state has brought another member state to the International Criminal Court. Of all the human rights violations in the world, the idea that the Maduro government is you know, it's uniquely bad is just totally wild. And this is the Canadian government doing all this pretty openly. I mean, you know, so the aid, Canada's largest announcement of aid, which is just really clearly designed to demonize the Maduro government, but also designed to support groups in Colombia, primarily that are aligned against the Venezuelan government. So Canada's really got its hands all over this effort at overthrowing the government of Venezuela.
Yeah, you can say this about the Trudeau and Freeland. They you just outlined they are actively working. They're not just saying, okay, we'll do some of the chores. They're out in front raising havoc. Now, how about aligning that, bringing that into conjunction with the fact that Trump still treats them like they're poor neighbors, and says he's going to put tariffs on steel, maintain tariffs on steel and aluminum, and they still do dirty work for him. They don't stop and say, well, why do you treat us like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, part of it is that the ties go much deeper than, you know, Canadian-American military ties or go much deeper than, you know, who's prime minister, who's president. And the same thing extends sort of all the way across the board. But I think part of it is also the fact that the Canadian capitalist class is hostile to the Venezuelan government. It's been hostile to the Venezuelan government for, you know, basically since the social transformation. And so you have a whole bunch of Canadian mining gold companies that have launched lawsuits against the Chavez government, and, you know, now extending into Maduro. Crystal X, $1.3 billion after decade-long legal battle, got a international legal battle. They got this huge award. Another Canadian mining company, similar kind of award. So there's Canadian mining companies. Petro-Canada had its operations in Venezuela nationalized back in 2007. So there's mining companies predominantly, but also some other banking interests and oil interests, mm-hmm. that have been hostile to this. But I think that the rise of Canadian mining investment, tens of billions of dollars of Canadian mining investment in Peru, in Ecuador, in Colombia, in Mexico, they fear the type of transformations, more nationalistic economic policies that Venezuela has pursued. And mm-hmm. so there's a clear sort of class interest or mining sector interest, you want to call it that, mm-hmm. Against these sort of transformations and trying to undermine and destroy mm-hmm. what's taking place in Venezuela. And Peter Monk, the head of Barrick Gold, made the point very openly back in 2007 in a letter to the Financial Times, where he compared Chavez to Hitler and the like.
Did he?
So it's I think there's, you know, this candidacy is clearly Chrystia Freeland doing this because there's some pressure from Washington, but it's also Chrystia Freeland and Global Affairs Canada doing this because they, you know, they believe in it.
Yeah, she's an ideologue. Yes. Yeah. This is Eve Engler, but it's eveengler.com. I urge you to go there. And he's also the author of a, I would say everybody ought to have this book on their shelf, The Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy. It's, if you read that, and none of these matters would be, will surprise you. About the conduct of Canada in this involving Venezuela, Haiti, this Lima Group thing, I can, when I see it, it's so strikingly an attempt to basically destroy any functioning organization of American state. And in Canada's behavior at the United Nations is, like Trump's, is very destructive of international law, the UN Charter. And we have this foreign minister, Freeland, he loves this phrase, what is it, a rule of law. We're a rule of law country. And yet, you know, Article 1 of the OAS charter said that non-interference in internal affairs of member states, and yet that's precisely what they're doing. I mean, it is destructive, is it not, of international organizations and of international law?
It certainly is. I mean, they announced the fourth round of sanctions. Canada did a week, 10 days ago against Venezuela, against different officials in Venezuela. This is alongside, of course, the more substantive American sanctions, which there was a report that came out from the Center for Economic Progress, I believe the name, found that 40,000 Venezuelans already died because of the American sanctions. Canada has joined this. This is, you know, violation of UN Charter, of OAS, and of course, unbelievably, Trudeau, Freeland, they present this as they present themselves as standing up to the international rules based order in their terminology. Mm-hmm. But it passes with basically no comment from the dominant media. I mean, Canada's allowed to impose sanctions outside of the UN structure, is able to, you know, Canadian ambassador back in 2017, just after Ben Roswell, the last Canadian ambassador in Caracas, after he left office, did an interview with Ottawa Citizen, where he said basically straight up that we were supporting opposition groups in Venezuela. They couch it, of course, in the language of human rights, but said that we were, you know, the leading voice in supporting Venezuelans speaking out on human rights. Mm-hmm. Well, this is interference. If the Russian ambassador was to say that here, I mean, you know, all this.
Well, they'd expel him, right? They would expel him.
Yeah, exactly. we're supposed to be under this, you know, huge fear of Russian interference in our upcoming election, and there's nothing, you know, in the vicinity of what Canada has done in Venezuelan political affairs. Mm-hmm. But it passes with barely a comment in the dominant media.
Yeah. Well, now you, of course, have been one of the people who pointed out the functioning of groups, say, under this rubric, NGOs, who are funded by, in the U.S., by the Fund for Democracy or whatever it is, U.S. Congress pays for it. We have so-called human rights groups, and they play a very negative role, and nobody ever asks or points out that the head of Human Rights Watch, for example, Mr. Roth, he seems to be kind of like Prince Saud. He's there permanently, and I guess he'll give the job to his daughter. I can't, you know, doesn't anybody ever think, has there ever been a meeting that they could go to and say, let's vote on you?
I'm not sure about in terms of the internal functioning of Human Rights Watch, but yeah, I mean, this is part of the Canada's role in Venezuela. That's again undiscussed. for instance, Ben Roswell, the former Canadian ambassador I just mentioned, who's now the head of the Canadian International Council and has been leading voice in all the media supporting Canada's policy in terms of trying to overthrow Maduro's government. He worked for the National Democratic Institute, which is one element of the National Endowment for Democracy, which is the main so-called democracy promotion, U.S.-based, funded by the U.S. government, you know, that's been involved in trying to overthrow governments from Haiti to Nicaragua to Venezuela to, you know, many different places. So he that's actually his background is from that world. And yeah, one of the things the Canadian embassy has been doing in as part of this campaign against the Chavez and Maduro government, for the past 10 years, they've been giving out a human rights award to the Canadian embassy in Caracas. They do it with an organization in Venezuela that's clearly aligned with the opposition. The individual is always somebody who's, you know, it's always structured around human rights, but it's somebody who just so happens to always oppose the government, to be a critic of the government's human rights position. And they give them some money, then they bring them on a tour, and they, you know, it's all part of that sort of demonization, destabilization. On a personal level, where I came to sort of understand just the extent to which foreign government-funded NGOs can play a role in undermining democracy, even while they state they're doing it for democracy, is in Haiti in 2004, 2005, lead up to the 2004 coup in Haiti. It was incredible to see all these groups that claimed to be, you know, left-wing progressive organizations that were clearly aligned with an effort to overthrow a democratically, you know, with its problems, of course, but a democratic elected government that had the support of the vast majority of poor, and that led to a brutal dictatorship that killed thousands of people. And all these sort of human rights democracy organizations had clearly aligned with Washington, Ottawa, Paris policy of destabilizing, overthrowing the government. And so, you know, we see some of that at a slightly lesser level, because Venezuela is a richer place than Haiti. And the power of the NGOs is not quite as, foreign NGOs, and I don't think it's quite as strong in Venezuela as it was in Haiti. But Haiti was really, it was central to the whole coup process. And it's something that, you know, the Canadian government, you know, continues to employ aid, so-called aid funding, for this purpose, from Syria to Venezuela to Ukraine to on and on and on.
Yes. By the way, I think that we should credit your writing and others who began to address this. And over the years, I think there is now a growing awareness of how insidious these organizations are. And more people ask the best question, which is, where does your money come from? And what are these training schools? This man, Guaido, had training in National Endowment for the Democracy or a similar body to which Mr. Guaido belonged and went to actual school on how to undermine a government.
Yeah, Max Blumenthal did a very good piece with somebody else, I'm getting the name, into Guaido's background, and with Otpor, the Yugoslavian Serbian organization that was set up by the Americans, were heavily involved in setting up and employing back in the late 90s to justify their militarist policy there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, Canada's heavily involved in this. People want to take a look at this, a little bit dated now, but in the case of Haiti, the Coalition to Oppose the Arms Trade, Richard Sanders did two amazing reports that went into incredible detail about the role of Canadian government-funded NGOs in justifying the coup and destabilizing the government. That I think if people you read these reports, I don't think you'll ever look at these organizations in the same kind of way.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, where could you find that?
It was a Coalition to Oppose the Arms Trade, Ottawa group. They did a couple reports back in 2008, 2009. So if you punch in just Coalition to Oppose the Arms Trade Haiti NGOs into Google, it should probably appear.
Mm-hmm. And on last point on that, by the way, I mean, to name a group I don't like, very frankly, is so-called Doctors Without Borders. They seem to have faded quite a bit, but they used to lead the charge against governments. And they seem to be trying to supplant an actually existing international organization, the Red Cross. I can remember Mr. Ignatieff writing very favorably of them and sort of saying, oh, the Red Cross is bad. But when we had the Venezuela crisis at the border, where the Americans practically showed up with tanks full of what they called medicine, they tried to break into Venezuela, the Red Cross said, that isn't aid to Venezuela. This has to be done on a cooperative basis. Venezuela will take the aid, but it has to be done through an institution like the Red Cross, where you don't get to put your politics in it. That was a kind of a dramatic moment.
It was a dramatic moment, and the coup forces, I think, thought they were going to have more success in terms of that whole sort of stunt in terms of trying to force so-called aid into the country from the border, from Colombia primarily. Like I mentioned earlier, Canada announced a big $53 million aid initiative at the time, which was the biggest at the time. I think the Americans have now added some other funding to that. But no, I mean, that was, you know, the position of the Red Cross and other some other international organizations was to say exactly that. You know, we don't want politicized aid. And if you look at the history of Canadian aid policy, you know, this is the best element of Canadian foreign policy. The military diplomacy tends to be less moral, if you like. The best element is aid element. And if you look at that, you find that there's a strong correlation, what I call the aid intervention principle, which is that, or frame it in more harsh terms, wherever the U.S. and Canada are killing people, you'll find that Canadian aid flows into those places. Basically, aid follows military intervention. And so there's a long history of that going back to the Korean War. And I think that what we see with Canada's aid to so-called aid to Venezuela is a continuation of that, where we're using it. And unfortunately, it's somewhat effective in terms of lots of progressive-minded people, the NDP.
That's how they get them over.
Yeah, you call it aid, and all of a sudden, all critical faculties just sort of seem to disappear. But you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what they call it. It's a matter of what the actual policy is.
Yeah, it's still baloney, right? EveEngler.com, and author of Black Book, The Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy. We really appreciate your writing on all this, and we look forward to talking to you further in the future.
Thanks, Russell.
Thanks a lot, Eve. Bye-bye. And that was Eve Engler, and he does do terrific work. Go to his site, and you know, you just scroll down. He's been talking about these subjects a long time. You could see it coming.